How about you introduce yourself? Say who you are and what you do and what you'll be doing.
Yeah, so I'm Noah. For the last 7.5 years and for the next 10 days, have run the data team at Basecamp. And then for the last couple of years and starting full-time in about 10 days, I am the proprietor of a woodworking business called Elevated Woodworking that makes wooden topographic maps.
Welcome to Rework, a podcast by Basecamp about the better way to work and run your business. I'm Waylon Wong.
And I'm Sean Hildner. Today's episode was personally very hard to record because our friend and coworker Noah Larang, who has led the data team here at Basecamp for the last 8 years, has just recently decided to leave us and pursue this fledgling woodworking business.
Noah's been telling us at work about his woodworking for a while now, and it's been really fun to follow along on his journey. He takes map data and then feeds it into the CNC robots that he has, and they carve out incredible topographical wooden maps that are very detailed and exactly to scale. And while we really enjoyed following along when he would tell us about an art fair he went to over the weekend or what he was up to in his workshop, it then took a very dark turn when he announced he was leaving Basecamp to pursue this business full time. But I really wanted to get him on the phone and interview him about what his journey has been so far and how he decided to leave the comfort of this full-time job to do his own business, because I love origin stories. That's what we do a lot of here on the show. And I think it's really neat to catch someone who has just made that decision and talk to them about their thought process. And hopefully for those of you who are maybe in a similar position or considering making a career change, this can be really helpful and interesting for you.
So best of luck to Noah in your new venture. And for all the other listeners, let's get back to Noah Larang.
So my job has been to do kind of anything to do with data. So that includes, you know, what data we need to solve the problems that we have about the business, whether that's marketing or support or financial or how fast the applications are, like all those kinds of things. That's kind of the scope of problem. And then it's like, what data do we need? How do we capture it? How do we store it? How do we analyze it? What do we do based on what we see in the data to change the business in some way that's better, so that at the end of the day, Basecamp is a better product, it's better as a financial business, and it's a better company for people to work at.
I'd like to state for the record that I take it as an intense personal betrayal that you're leaving Basecamp.
Same.
But I'm able to rise above that for the sake of this great content we're going to have. Because I actually think it's really interesting to catch someone in the process of deciding to leave a day job to do a different kind of business, their own business, full time. Because I think a lot of the people we find to interview on the show often have that kind of origin story. And I just think it's really neat to catch someone right at that transition point, especially someone that we know.
Yeah, in 5 years, it's either going to be a great origin story or it's going to be like a cautionary tale for people not to do what I'm doing.
They both work.
Well, can we get started with when you decided to start Elevated Woodworking as a side, would you call it a side business or was it more of a hobby? Like, how did it get started a couple of years ago?
Yeah, so I've been doing woodworking purely as a hobby for most of my life to some extent, and pretty seriously for the last 6 or 7 years. And about 2.5 years ago, I started making wooden maps. And it just started as something that I was doing because I thought, hey, this is something I can do. I've always loved maps. It's pretty cool.
What was this first map that you made?
Yeah, so the first map I made is it's a map of the United States. Each state is made from a different piece of wood, and then they all fit together on the wall. So it's about 7 feet wide, 4 feet tall, and it's topographic. So it's about 2 inches thick at the thickest, which would be the highest point in the U.S., and then it goes down to sea level at a wall. And it's just glued to my living room wall right now.
How long did it take you to make it?
The first map I started it on Christmas Day of 2015. And it took about 4 months. So I think it probably was something like 400 hours of total work to do the first one. And I ended up finishing it, I think, in April. So yeah, 4 or 5 months from start to finish. So I made one map and I put it on my living room wall and I posted it online. And people started asking, hey, I like this. Can I buy it or can I buy a piece of it? And so that's kind of how it started, is that I just started selling first just on Etsy and then on my own website and now through some other ways too. I just started kind of selling these things because I enjoyed making them and people seemed to like them. And, you know, that over time kind of became a pretty real business.
So these messages that you got online after you took a picture of it and shared it, were they from people you knew or were they from strangers?
From strangers. I would say that, like, I've sold a couple thousand maps now of some form or another, and maybe 10 of them have been to people that I know, including, in full disclosure, Mr. Sean Hildner, who's part of this podcast.
Yeah, I bought one for my father for Christmas last year.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
What was it of?
Little plot of land where his, like, cabin is up at the North Fork of the Flathead River.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. That's so nice. It's Does cute. Your dad have it hanging up?
I have no idea. I have not been back since Christmas, so... We'll call them up and ask.
So you shared it online and it's like strangers, like where did they found you just because like it got like shared around? I'm just thinking like, I don't know that many. I don't know. Like, I feel like everyone that I like know through Facebook and Instagram, I like know somehow. So how did the strangers find you?
Yeah, so I put it on Reddit, which was in hindsight, like a great idea and a terrible idea. I put it on... I think the DIY subreddit. And I actually explained, like, here's how I did it. And I published all the steps to copy it. Because at the time, like, it wasn't a business. It was just something cool that I did that I wanted to share. And so that's really where it all started, was from posting it on Reddit, although I didn't ultimately sell that many maps to people from Reddit, because it turns out that random strangers on the internet who hang out in do-it-yourself subreddits aren't necessarily the most likely to buy an expensive piece of art. But that was kind of where it started to get some attention. And then from there, I ended up publishing an article again, kind of explaining how to do it for people who had computer-controlled routers and liked to make things in Make Magazine. And that was also in 2016. And so that started to get some attention too.
For those first few orders, well, I mean, all the way up until now, you've been doing this while also keeping your full-time job. So how did you manage the time in terms of what you would kind of promise to customers about turnaround and getting it to them and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so I don't have kids right now. I don't have any other hobbies besides this. And so I basically, for the last 2.5 years, have been working like a second full-time job on nights and weekends. I've basically always kept to a 2 or 3 week turnaround time as being kind of my standard turnaround. And for the most part, like I try not to have a backlog and like I try to, in a lot of ways, I've always tried to act like this is a real business and not just some hobby thing that I do when I feel like it or have time. Because to my customers, like they don't care if I have a day job or not. They just want the thing that they are buying. And so like I've always tried to kind of treat it like that. One of the nice things about the product is that a lot of the time is taken up using a robot, basically a computer controlled router that does the rough cutting. So that can work while I do something else. And I'm also fortunate that I've spent the last 7 or 8 years working at Basecamp, which is a company that I worked remotely for. So I can work, you know, next to my robot in the next room over. And it'll work for 3 or 4 or 5 hours. And then I'll go and I'll do something for 5 minutes and then it'll work for another 3 or 4 or 5 hours. And so I've been able to do kind of the two things at once, you know, taking my coffee break and using that to feed my robots.
Do your robots have names?
They do.
Are you going to tell me what they are?
Yeah. So I have two main robots. The first one, which is one that I built kind of from scratch, I call Shapey because it shapes things. It's not a very good name, but it's called Shapey. And then the second one I built from a kit earlier this year, it's named Rick, which like doesn't make any sense on its own. But at one point I was going to build another robot that I was going to call Morty. So I would have Rick and Morty. But then Morty got kind of scratched. And so now it's just Rick. But yeah, of course I named my robots.
And how did you decide to go on Etsy?
Yeah. So at the time, I think Etsy was just kind of the default thing. You know, a lot of people sell wood things on Etsy. It was really easy to get going. I didn't need a website. There was no monthly fee. I could just upload pictures and descriptions and start making sales. And so Etsy was just like the path of least resistance to not having to worry about bank accounts or like anything complicated. They just took care of all of that for me.
And did you learn any interesting things about what it's like to be someone selling on Etsy, like as you got more into it?
Don't kick me off Etsy, but it's not a great place because there's a tremendous number of people posting stuff on Etsy. And a lot of it isn't what Etsy was really originally about, right? Etsy, people think about as being this source for handmade and vintage stuff. And there's still all of that great stuff there, but there's also all this other stuff. And so getting traffic on Etsy, getting discovered on Etsy is really hard. And I've basically never thought of it as like Etsy is some way in which I'm going to get a lot of people are going to discover me because Etsy is going to feature me or I'm going to show up well at Etsy search results. I always treated Etsy as like, it was a way to have an online store, and getting the people to that online store is my responsibility. And so that's changed a little since then, because now I have a website and that's where I put my focus in getting people to go to is my website. And so what I do sell on Etsy is through kind of their discovery mechanisms. But Etsy is a really tough place to try to build a craft business. And it's an especially tough place if you're doing something that has competition. I don't really have direct competition, so that's great. But if you're trying to sell like cutting boards or something like that on Etsy that a million people make, I don't know how anyone is doing anything of particular meaning there.
So what kind of marketing did you do, especially as, you know, in kind of like the earlier part of this, as you were still ramping it up? Like, did you feel like you needed to devote a lot of your time to getting your name out there? And how did you do it?
Yeah, I don't really... I don't have a good answer for that because I'm bad at it. So I try to do the social media marketing thing. Like I post on Instagram and I have Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest and stuff like that. But I'm not very good at those and they don't do a whole lot for me. And I've like bought a little bit of AdWords and Facebook ads and stuff like that. It kind of one of the reasons why I'm excited to do this full time is that like I've grown to the point where I am basically not doing any real marketing beyond kind of word of mouth and like some organic search results and doing events in person. And so like, I think there's a lot of potential if I actually figured out how to do marketing. But mostly I've just kind of gotten by on, you know, people find my Reddit post or they find my Make Magazine article and then they search for my name, or someone who bought one, gave it to someone, and then they told someone else about it. And that's really been kind of how I've grown so far.
What kind of scale are you looking for?
So my goal is basically to build the biggest business that I can build that's just me. I have absolutely no desire to build a business that has employees, just because that's not what I want to do. Like, I don't want to have...
I don't like talking to strangers.
Yeah.
I don't like talking to employees.
Yeah, I basically just want to be in my shop with my robots all day. And like, yes, maybe I'm an agoraphobe, but I just like, that's my goal is like, how big can I make this doing kind of it all by myself, not having to work 80 hours of like hand sanding maps, like 20 hours of hand sanding maps a week, 30 hours, that sounds good. So that's kind of my goal. That works out to being like 3 or 4 times bigger than it is today. But like, I would be perfectly happy to do a business where it never grows. It grows 3 or 4 times what it is today and then never grows further than that, because that's the pace that's sustainable and fun and enjoyable for me.
How much of that do you think was influenced by working here at Basecamp?
That's a good question. So I think, I don't know, at this point, like it's hard to say. Basecamp has been the majority of my professional life. And so like, no doubt everything I think about business is in some way influenced by it, and I don't even realize it. I think certainly the notion that there is an element of business that I enjoy, and so I want to build my business around being able to do the things that I enjoy, is definitely something that I see at Basecamp and take from Basecamp. So Basecamp, a company, right, it's 52, 53, something like that, employees. And it could be 500 employees, right? It could be 10 times the revenue that it is, but that would take away the things that Jason and David and other people here enjoy. And so making that conscious decision of like, this is what we want, this is how we want to build it, I think, is certainly something that I've seen firsthand here as being a trade-off that you make, because it's not about kind of growing to the maximum scale.
When did you decide to buy a space? And can you talk a little bit about that? Because I know that was a really huge decision.
Yeah, so for a long time, I was working out of my two-car garage, which had never had a car in it in the entire time we'd owned our house. And then last year, I bought a 3,800 square foot commercial warehouse. And I had been kind of casually, is even probably overstating it, like I looked at commercial property listings, because when you are a woodworker and you have 400 square feet, like you, everybody who has 400 square feet that I know of wants more, because it's just not a lot of space to do things. And so I'd like been looking for years at commercial properties, and never really found anything that was kind of in my budget, but also like made sense for location and type of space. And then kind of purely by chance, I saw this property, which is an old commercial building in an old coal town that's like 10 minutes from my house. And I still kind of was looking at it as a joke when I saw the listing. And I sent it to my wife and she said, yeah, that's not bad. And it just kind of happened from there that it was, you know, one of the great things, I live just outside of Pittsburgh. And one of the nice things about living in a, what used to be a booming industrial town, but now isn't a booming industrial town, is that commercial real estate of this type is actually really affordable. And so like it was the right price at the right location. It's a good amount of space. And so we did it, and it was maybe a little crazy, but it certainly is nice to not be in the garage anymore.
When you committed to buying that space, did you think to yourself, oh, this is going to be a full-time thing now? Or were you still thinking, this is just what I need to keep the hobby and the side business at the level I want it?
There was the idea that maybe someday it would be a full-time thing, but I very explicitly didn't buy it with the intention of like, this must be a full-time thing for this purchase to make sense. Like it was always the idea was like, well, maybe this becomes a full-time thing. Or maybe this is just like the best hobby space ever, and I rent out half of it for storage or something like that. So there was always that kind of both options were possible. I do think that having the space has certainly accelerated the business and made it feel more like a real thing. You know, I've been able to do things that there was no chance I'd be able to do in 450 square feet. Like there just isn't the space to build some of these bigger maps that I've done. And also, like, when you have a commercial space, you need commercial insurance, which is given not to individuals, but to businesses. And, like, that puts you in a mindset of, like, yeah, this is a legitimate thing that I'm doing here. So, you know, let's build it to be something that's legitimate to make it worthy of having this big space.
Had you already incorporated in all that stuff before you bought the space?
So I'm, in fact, not incorporated. I'm just a sole proprietorship. And this is kind of the other thing that... maybe I learned from Basecamp, which is that like a lot of companies are really focused on playing the company. And so you have these like startups that are like just a person with an idea, and they like have an LLC and like stock option agreements and like other stuff before they've written a single line of code or whatever. And to me, it's like, how simple can I keep things? So I'm a sole proprietor. It's a pass-through entity on my taxes. Like I have the right business licenses and stuff, but I'm not some complicated corporate entity, because it's totally unnecessary for what I'm doing. Like I'm just making, you know, one of a kind pieces of art, basically. And so I try to keep things as simple as I can.
When did the seed first get planted in your mind of, I think I want to do this full time?
I don't really know. I wish I did know.
Was it something Sean said?
I wasn't here.
It's definitely something Sean said. And when Sean went on sabbatical, and I couldn't go on without him. And so I just was like, this is too much.
Now we're talking.
You know, I think it's been kind of an idea that I've had that this was potentially viable basically since last December. So last December, I was on sabbatical from Basecamp for the month. And I did a lot of kind of Christmas orders during my time off. And I did a big Christmas fair. And it was, that kind of taught me two things. So one is like there, from that point, it started to seem like maybe there is a really viable business here, right? Like this is the thing, like I make something that's very commonly given as a gift. And so it's very seasonal. And so last Christmas was the first time I was really doing maps and selling them in a real way at the holiday season. And so I got the first hint that hey, this isn't quite yet a viable business, but there's definitely the potential there. And then two is like, I actually like this routine, right? Of I wasn't going into work at Basecamp every day, but I was going into work every day. And I really enjoyed that kind of rhythm of I was in the shop every day. I was making maps. It wasn't a nights and weekends only thing. And so that was when I was like, well, yeah, this actually, if I did this every day full time, this would be pretty good if I could get it to that point.
Yeah. And then as you started to think more seriously about it, did you have a list in your head of the things you needed to check off or things you needed to get done before you could make a go of it full time?
I did, but I didn't do those things. I did some of those things and decided it wasn't enough. And then I didn't do the other things. So like in my dream world, my business would already be two or three times bigger at the time that I went full time. Because if I did that, then there would be zero risk in it. Like that would be the dream state. What I ultimately decided was that, I would just ignore that fact though, because like I've gotten to the point where, I think there's potential for the business here to be kind of at the scale that I want it to be, which is like me full-time busy, nicely compensated, whatever, but not having to hire. I think that potential is there. But I also am kind of at the limit of how much I can grow the business while still working a full-time job for Basecamp and doing justice to both those things. And so that's why I decided to take the plunge, you could say, maybe a little earlier than my dream was, just because, you know, I'm never going to get to the dream unless I go for the dream, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, like that was kind of the big thing I was waiting for. It was basically getting the business to the point where it was income replacement, which is, I think, kind of a ludicrous goal. So I abandoned it.
And this harkens back to a question I asked you earlier about working at Basecamp and whether the principles that get lived out here and talked about a lot kind of made their way into your own business. And I wanted to ask you kind of the inverse of that. Were there any things that you had believed or kind of taken for granted or assumed working here that then you changed your mind about once you were building your own business? Does that make sense?
I don't know that there are principles that I changed my mind about, but there are a few things that are definitely different that are really clear to me in doing maps versus Basecamp. So one of them is that like selling a physical product to consumers is very different than selling a piece of software to a business, right? When people are buying a piece of software for a business, like they're buying something functional. When people are buying something personally with their own money for display in their home, it's a much more emotional thing. So like that's just very different from kind of the way that Basecamp thinks about building products and selling them, because you're not trying to scratch some functional itch with a wooden topographic map, like that there is no such thing. And so like, that's very different from the experience of how, you know, I've tried to help sell Basecamp for a long time. I think the other thing is just like, Basecamp is in some ways a spoiling place in that it's been around for so long. It's so big and so successful and has such a brand that, kind of anything that Basecamp does kind of, gets a lot of buzz, gets a lot of attention, gets a good momentum. And starting from nothing is really a different experience from that, right? Like, so we've launched new products at Basecamp in the time that I've been here. I've helped on a number of them. But that's really different from launching a new product when you have no existing product, when you have no existing audience, when you have no existing customer base. And so that's been a really kind of different experience for me as well.
When you say people are making more of an emotional decision when they buy your product, do you feel like you have to sell yourself more as the artist? Like, is that also what people are buying? Not just the art, but, it was obviously made by this man and his robots.
I think that, yeah, a lot of the times when people are buying a piece of art, they're not just buying the thing to look at, but they're buying the story. They want to know how it was made and like who made it and that kind of thing. I don't do a good job of telling that story or selling that story. And that is not because I don't think it's important or would be effective. I'm just bad at that. But I do think that when people buy art in general, that's a huge portion of what they're buying is not just the finished object, but their understanding of the process and everything that went into it. I struggle with that. I also struggle with the question of whether like what I'm selling is quote unquote art. And I wrote a Medium post about this a few months ago, because like people have their perceptions about like what art is, and if a computer is involved and a robot is involved, like, is that art? And so some of that has made me probably more hesitant about telling the story of how it's made than I should be. Not that I like hide how it's made, right? Like, I'm clearly not carving these things by hand and then selling them for $10. Like, that obviously doesn't happen. But I don't know, like, to me, the story is a little complicated. And so I just kind of focus on what the end object is and how that makes people feel versus the story. But that's almost certainly handicapping me in some ways. Like, I got to tell you that the running a craft business or an art business is like one of the weirdest emotional journeys you can possibly be on, because it's like, I mean, this is the only small business I've ever started, so I don't have a lot of comparison, but I would guess that any small business owner, there's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of self-doubt. There's a lot of like, is what I'm building good enough? Is there a market here? When you are then building something that is like a piece of art or a craft, you have to add to that, like, is my stuff any good? Like, never mind, is there a market for it? But like, is what I'm doing good? Does it resonate to people? Are people going to like it? It is at times kind of crippling in terms of the, maybe this is just me, but like the self-doubt that you experience when you're trying to sell something that you made that is purely artistic is, I think, pretty substantial. And yeah, I suspect everybody feels it, but nobody talks about it.
What do you get out of woodworking that you were not getting from Basecamp?
Yeah, it's really satisfying to make something, right? And to come in the day and there's nothing there. And at the end of the day, there is something there that you can touch and feel and has something tangible. And that, I think, is what like I get that you don't get in the tech industry, because like at the end of the day, you might have a piece of code, but it's really different when you start the day with a block of wood and you finish the day with a finished map. And that's just a really satisfying feeling. And it hasn't gone away over 1,000 maps.
Awesome. Thank you, Noah.
Thanks, Noah. I'm so sad.
I'm sad too.
Yeah. So overall, what we took out of this interview is that everything sucks.
Yeah. It's funny because so before I came to Basecamp, I was consulting. So I was like traveling all the time and working 80 or 90 hours a week. And I was super burned out. And so deciding to come to Basecamp was like a really easy decision. Now, 8 years later, deciding to leave Basecamp is like the hardest decision I've made in my life. Like, I don't, like, I'm excited, but I'm also really sad and I'm going to miss the people and the work terribly. Yeah.
Well, I'm literally crying.
We got it. We finally got tears on the podcast.
I got my crying done last week, so I'm not going to cry now. I don't think.
Well, we weren't here last week.
Ugh. I was here last week.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
we'll miss you, Noah.
It's not goodbye. It's so long.
Okay.
Waylon across the table is an absolute wreck right now. You should know that.
I'm fine. Thank you for talking to us.
Of course.
Oh, wait, before you go, you should tell everyone your social media handles.
Oh, yeah. So plug all your shit.
You got to plug.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is the whole point. You should get your maps at elevatedwoodworking.com, or you can follow me on Instagram at elevatedwoodworking, or Facebook at elevatedwoodworking, or Twitter at elevatedwood, or just Google elevatedwoodworking, and hopefully you don't find someone else who's using that as a name.
Rework is produced by Waylon Wong and me, Sean Hildner. Our theme song is Broken by Design by Clipart.
You can find show notes for this episode and every episode at rework.fm. We are on Twitter at Rework Podcast. And you can also leave us a voicemail at 708-628-7850.